Welcome to Focus on the Community on Memories 107.9 and the General 95.9 and 1580 WAMW. I'm Grant Schwartzentruber. Each week we shine a spotlight on topics important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington and Ligoti. Well, I'm excited about today's show for a couple of reasons. And we have an important guest, someone who's very active in our community, and that's Pete Aldrich with the Lighthouse Recovery Center. Good to see you, Pete.
Good morning, Grant.
All right. I'm very happy that you could make it out today. We've had some inclement weather over the past couple of days, and I just appreciate you making time to do this.
Yes, that's fine.
Well, what we're going to talk about today, Pete, is the issue of addiction in our community. And I know it's something that you know a lot about. And I'll just start out by, let's find out a little bit about your background and how you got into this.
Well, Grant, I, for about 9 years, really was strung out myself on a lot of different drugs. My drug of choice was methamphetamine, but ended up going to heroin and other things. So in 1999, had an encounter with the Lord at Gibson County Jail, and I've never been the same. And out of that, coming through the probation and jail and all the different things, that we founded a class to help people that were in addiction, and we called it Lighthouse Addiction Classes. And by the grace of God, out of that came Lighthouse Recovery Center. And so we've just really been out there to try to help people change their lives.
That's wonderful. It's always nice to hear a success story from someone, especially who's been in that situation. And you talked about you were down in jail at Gibson County. Why were you down there?
Multiple charges, but what happened was Judge Earl Penrod, he told me I wasn't getting out of his jail, and he held me there. So I had charges all over the place, but when I got in his jail, he told me I wasn't leaving until I did my time. So saved my life.
Sure. So you send Judge Penrod a Christmas card or not? Really?
I used to, and Judge Dwyer. Judge Dwyer gave me opportunity when I came here.
I see.
And I remember her lowering her glasses one time in Black Buggy Restaurant when I worked there and looked at me, and that would put the fear of God in anybody. And she said, "Mr. Aldrich, your success story to me. Let's keep it that way."
Sure.
I said, "Yes, ma'am."
Wow. Good for you. So you've had a difficult past, and I mean, how long were you involved with kind of that type of thing? And I mean, was it running with the wrong crowd? What would you attribute it to?
I mean, as a young person, we moved to Indianapolis. My mom and dad went through a divorce, kind of got into it, got into church and was a preacher for a little while, and my marriage fell apart, and I went face first into alcohol, and a year later I was using methamphetamine, and within 6 months had lost my job, and the only way to supply the demand that I had for the use was to start dealing.
I see. And so you dealed where, around here or where?
Oakland City, Washington, a lot in Washington. I mean, I was a pretty big menace to a lot of our police. I was new in the dealing, and Todd Church and Kevin Buckley, they was young policemen, and boy, did we have a time.
Wow. I see. So they probably know you quite well then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they saved me a few times too. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, they did.
Good. Well, you talked about why you changed. You said you had an encounter with the Lord. And I know not everyone has that encounter, but tell me maybe a little bit about that and how that affected you.
It's almost so hard to explain, because it was almost like it was unreal the way that the Lord touched my heart. But I was in that jail, and a thought came to me, do you want to live this way the rest of your life? And because I'd been religious, I thought that I could never change, and I'd had my chance. And then I read a book by Max Lucado talking about the grip of grace and how Jeffrey Dahmer had gave his life to the Lord. And somewhere in reading about Jeffrey Dahmer getting saved, I thought, you know what? I've done some crazy things, but I ain't been that crazy. Maybe
Dahmer.
I got a chance. Yeah. Yeah. And so I asked the Lord for a chance, and he gave me one. He changed me.
That's amazing.
I've never used since then.
Is that right?
February 23rd, 1999.
Wow. Were you in jail at that point?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And when did you get out of jail?
I believe it was in August. I come to Davis County, and that was when Judge Dwyer said, we're going to give you an opportunity. And I went to Laverne Graber came to court with me, and I went to work at Black Buggy Restaurant.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
With doing the buffet thing, right?
I was doing dishes for a long time, but yeah, I like the buffet.
That's wonderful. Delicious. Yeah. All right. So You obviously know the bad side of this, and you've been involved with the Lighthouse for how long now?
We started in 2003. Yes.
And kind of what was the vision of what you wanted to do when you started that?
Honestly, it was this. I come home, and I knew I couldn't hang around even some of my own family members. I had an understanding of addiction and also what we call the Adamic nature, our sinful nature. I knew I couldn't hang out with the people I used to hang out with, and I needed to move some furniture, and I didn't feel safe calling anybody. And I thought, I wonder how many people out there is like that.
Wow.
And I said, you know what? And I started talking, and Mike Healy helped me. He came down, the newspaper did a story. I mean, the whole city got behind it. And we got a little building down there off Laverne, and we started to celebrate recovery. And 8 people one night, and the next night was 16 and 35 and then 50.
Wow.
And we outgrew the building.
That's wonderful. And, I mean, obviously you've had some people that didn't make it all the way through and maybe have relapsed and done different things. But in general, it seems like it's been very successful and just an amazing thing for the community.
Grant, you know, in 2005, in the middle of doing this, August 21st, I lost my brother to a fentanyl overdose.
Wow.
While I was in Indianapolis.
Fentanyl, it's an opioid, right?
Yes, it is. It is, I believe, synthetic morphine, whatever. It's powerful. Having a lot of trouble with it right now in the heroin. People
right.
are putting elephant fentanyl into the heroin. A lot of people's dying on it. But I was standing in Indianapolis talking about the goodness of the Lord and what he could do in your life, and got out of church and got a phone call, and they told me to get home. We drove home as fast as we could, and my brother was laying. I can still walk to that same room.
Scary.
In that emergency room.
Wow.
My brother was laying there gone.
Where was it? Where did that happen?
Here at Davis County.
Wow.
Yes.
And so I'd say that was 2 years after you started Lighthouse, is
yes,
that right?
Yes,
and that was quite a wake-up call.
Yeah, and we probably started a little bit before that, but I was looking, and we got our 501c3 at 2003. So.
Okay. Now, some of the things I want to talk to you about, some of which are, you know, it's going to be, it's not a glamorous or a happy thing for our community, but it's really something, I mean, it's real, and it's stuff that you see all the time. It seems like in our community there, you know, for a long time now, methamphetamine's been kind of the drug of choice. But maybe that's changing. At least on a national level, you hear it from the White House. You hear you see it on the news, on national news.
Yes.
Talking about opioids.
Yeah. It seems like there's trends in drug addiction. When I was young, it was acid, LSD, all kinds of crazy things. Cocaine was big. It just seems like things trend. I don't really understand all of that. I believe some of it's spiritual, but also the demand for whatever, you know, the big opioid thing is, you know, doctors have been handing them out forever like jelly beans.
Right.
And, you know, if you do a study, you find out that on the opioids, if you do a study, you look, and any of the companies, Eli Lilly, whoever it is, you do a study, find out how long they say opioids work in the body. There's no longer than a 6-month study. So if they work for a year or 2 years, if they was something that should be used consistently, then there would be a longer study with a $1 trillion company.
I see.
So, and then also the other thing with the way the drug works is when you start with a little bit, like any other drug, it takes more and it takes more and it takes more until finally you take so much your body can't handle it.
Yeah. I heard a stat the other day, and I don't know if this is true, but everyone in America could have a 3-week supply at a normal dosage level of opioids with how much has been prescribed and how much is out there.
Yes, yes. It's crazy. And you know what? If you look in other countries, I was talking to Dr. Lynch up here. My wife was going to a program with him, and he was showing us how only 80-some percent of all opioids that are prescribed is in America.
Holy cow. 80% in America.
80% that are prescribed is in America.
And they said, and I know we're throwing a lot of numbers out here for the listenership, I'm with Pete Aldridge of the Lighthouse Recovery Center, and we're talking about addiction, we're talking about opioids and different drugs, and how do we address that issue in our community. But I heard the White House, I think, came out with some comments at the end of last year, at the end of 2017, that 100 million people were on opioids in the United States.
Yes.
100 million people. There's only 300 million people in the United States.
It's unbelievable.
330 maybe. But it's about a third of our population takes it legitimately or perhaps illegitimately.
Yes.
But when you've got that flood in the market, there's bound to be some improper usage.
And what happens is I've dealt with a lot of people. Well, I could name, I'm not going to, but many people I've worked with are dead today because overprescribing. And sometimes it's not the overprescribing, is, you know, stuff like methadone and Xanax together is okay. Toxic because it isn't really, they don't count it as a drug overdose. They call it respiratory failure because you lay down and you go to sleep, everything slows down so much. And so they're taking the same thing they always took, or they drink extra two or three beers. And this mix of this type of a drug with the other type of a drug, the alcohol or the Xanax, is just potent. And so a lot of people have died from that was doing the same thing over and over, thought right. It was fine. So
wow. It's amazing. When you look at graphs and the amount of overdoses we've had in the United States, it's really increased over yes. a short period of time just because of the potency yes. of what's available. I guess I want to talk specifically about our community now. And you know, like I said earlier, it's been a kind of a meth is right. the drug of choice, has been for a long time. Are you seeing that change? And why? If yes, then why?
Yes, we're seeing a lot of people coming in, and I've been seeing it for quite a while from doing this. We talked about in some of our meetings back when we was all getting together with we had the main team, Meth Awareness is Necessary, with Beth Davis and who else was coming, prosecutor, a lot of people.
Sure.
But we seen the change taking place.
And this was when did you kind of see the change taking place?
This was years ago. We seen it starting to take place.
I see.
You know, so a lot more people getting on the pain medicine. People used to be on meth was using pain medicine, and it was just a trading of addictions.
Mm-hmm.
So it was probably, I don't know, 6 years ago, maybe we started talking, maybe a little longer than that.
And I know, so they say even like areas not far from here, you know, Eastern Kentucky is the heroin capital of the
heroin's
world.
Heroin's everywhere right now. It's on our streets.
Right.
It's in Indianapolis. It's in Louisville. It's just everywhere. I mean, people are dying like crazy in Louisville.
Yeah.
You know, I have people coming right now that we're working with that was from here that's been going to Louisville picking up, and they are so messed up and have literally watched people die left and right. Doing a shot, everybody done the same thing, but it wasn't mixed right. And, you know, do a shot and one person falls over dead or has to do a Narcon or whatever it is that they do to bring
And why do you think that we saw a change from, say, I know there's still the availability of meth, but why has there been a change from, say, meth to an opioid?
I would say across the board, especially, you know, I know our county better than better than other counties or even states, but I know that our people, Sheriff Harbstreit, you know, they have tackled this thing. Our court system, you know, the whole judicial system.
You're saying they've attacked the meth issue?
Yes, yes. I mean, they have hit it from every direction as far as offering people help, hitting the drug dealers hard, trying to figure out who is a drug dealer and who's just dealing because they're using, and who's
right.
doing what and where's it coming from.
Right.
They've done an awesome job across the board.
It does seem like the local law enforcement and prosecutors and a lot of people have been focused on meth very heavily for
yes.
quite a period
yeah.
of time.
You look and see the city police making big arrests. You know, you see the county, you see the drug task force involved here with the sheriff's department. It's just they've done an awesome job.
Sure. No, it seems like a lot of people have been paying attention to it. But now we've got this other issue, right?
I
mean,
yes,
we've kind of had a change of things, and I mean, Daviess County and opioids was just in the news this week. So the commissioners are debating as to whether or not they're going to engage in a lawsuit, I guess,
right.
against the opioid industry.
Right.
And you know, to be honest, I don't know that that's necessarily going to solve anything. I mean, you're just participating in a
right.
lawsuit to sue
yeah.
drug makers. But there's a lot of fault. And there's a lot of problems.
Yes,
there's a lot of people that have led us yes. to where we are right now.
I seen a Facebook post the other day, and somebody said my doctor was my drug dealer.
Yeah.
And I don't believe doctors meant to do this. We had Josh Gunn come down from AIT Laboratory okay. out of Indianapolis, and he is a toxicologist, which was a few years ago. And he sat and talked to our doctors and explained to them the half-life and the way drugs work, and that was things that they learned when they first become doctors. And at first they was kind of, you know, who is this guy? But when he got done and he explained why methadone was killing people and how long its half-life was, meaning you don't feel its effect but it's still in you, so you take more to fill its effect, and it stacks and stacks, mm-hmm. and then you overdose on just a little bit. And when he explained that, there was quite a few of our doctors. I remember Dr. Collins said, what do we do, and what do we do right now?
Right.
And one of the statements made was, you know, put up in your offices, you know, pain won't kill you, but painkillers will.
Yep.
And at that point, I mean, I watched our doctors begin to cut back, and now we know a lot of doctors won't even prescribe painkillers.
Right.
You know?
Right. And it's kind of a interesting thing in which you've got, I mean, it does seem like meth's kind of gone away. Is it because of the restriction in pain medicine?
It hasn't went away. What happened?
Not as much.
Yeah. What's happened, Grant, is when they put the hit and started stopping the battery, stopping the anhydrous, you know, doing the thing on the pills.
Restricting
can't get the
cold.
There
cold
you go.
Medicine.
And so, but what that does is immediately, you know, there's a cartel out there that knows what we need. And so when they stop that, then you know all the mess started coming back in from from the other countries, or from California, or from a lot of places. I mean, it's just crazy. I ran into a deal one time where it was coming from Haiti. That's just insane. The poorest country, is sending meth to make money in America, and that was going on. So that's what's going on right now, is the doctors are doing what they can, but there's a cartel out there,
mm-hmm.
and they say, okay, these people want opiates, we can give it to them in the purest form.
Right.
And so now we got heroin dealers starting to filter in from everywhere. So
right.
And
you made the comment earlier that my doctor was my drug dealer.
Yeah.
Is there an issue that you see where, physicians are just, they're
over-prescribing it? I seen it. I have it for a while. I had a man walk in my office 3 years ago with a lady that was falling out of her seat, and I had it wrote down for a long time, but she was on 4 Dilaudids a day. She was on Xanax. She was on, at that time it was Lortabs, where now they're called Norco, and she was on Tramadol. And I told him, he said, what can you help her? I said, you better get her to a hospital, because
right.
this is a toxic, she's a walking dead person right now. She couldn't even stay awake to talk to us.
Wow.
And it was prescribed by her doctor to take this every day.
Wow. So clearly we've got a problem. I don't think we have to explain that to anyone. I want to transition a bit, and I am on with Pete Aldrich with the Lighthouse Recovery Center. And Pete's got a ton of information. We've talked about different addictions and just trying to explain that. Obviously we've got a problem. It's not just here. It's everywhere. But I guess the question that I've got for you is, how do we deal with some of these things? What have you seen be successful, and what are some things that just aren't successful?
Well, I think the community coming together, and maybe we need to form something like the Maine team was, as far as how do we deal with this? What do we do? The coalition of, the judicial system, sheriff's department, everybody would get together. We had, we had rallies and different stuff. Maybe we need to do something like that. I know a big part of my recovery was, Sheriff Harpstrike put a lot of confidence in me. I did my community service at the little jail down there. And then I remember Jane Smith and, having confidence in me, So,
right.
Some way we've got to, I had a young couple just come in, scared me to death. They were standing on the front row of the church just Wednesday night, asleep, standing up. And they come in and they had told me, what they were on. And I had them go to the hospital first.
Wow.
And so we need our hospital to be on board with us. What
know
do we
what's
do?
Going on,
I want to take them. I want to help them. But sure. I also don't want them dying in the middle of the night. It's a big liability. So it's a great big thing. You get these people detoxed isn't an easy thing. Or where do you find to detox them? It's going to take a whole community coming together and figuring out how we do this.
Sure. So it's kind of maybe an across the board approach.
Yes.
Obviously the community has to come together, but these drugs come in from different places. It's not like we can get every person in the United States to be on the same page.
Or other countries.
Yes.
See, there's even a deal on the internet for a long time where people were ordering a lot of opiates and they were coming in from other countries with any kind of prescription. So, and I know that's been hit too by different drug agencies.
So it just comes in through the mail. Is that
there
right?
You go. And so,
wow.
It's a battle.
Right.
It's a battle.
So, I mean, do you think, and I don't know how you've seen success, but one-on-one stuff, I mean, is it the spiritual element that really helps people? Is it, you know, you talked about Sheriff Harbstreit having faith in you and giving you a chance and really sticking with you. Is it that one-on-one contact with someone?
I believe it's an element of a little bit of everything, you know, especially with the opiates, more medical than the methamphetamine was. You could just lay down, go to sleep, and psychologically you'd want the methamphetamine, but eventually, you know, you just sleep and come off of it, where this is horrible. I mean, you cramp, you're hurting, you're aching, you're vomiting. It's really rough, you know, and then throw Xanax. A lot of the hospitals right now, when I take somebody, if they're not alcohol or Xanax, they won't take them for detox. If they just won't take them.
And why is that?
Because I guess, and this is what I think, no, I'm not a doctor, but I think because alcohol and Xanax, or when I say Xanax, it would be benzodiazepine, are so dangerous to come off of, it can kill you. Most people don't die coming off of opiates. They feel like they're dying. That's why they go back. People don't die coming off methamphetamine. People don't die coming off heroin. Not very many. You know, so, and I'm sure they know this, you know, but yeah, it's a hard thing.
But it's just so dangerous. Is that why they don't want to take them?
I don't think it's dangerous. I think the thing is they're not going to die. They don't have insurance. And so what do you do with them? It takes 5 or 6 days to get them off of it. And if you don't have something to help them after that, they're going to go right back on it. So you're kind of wasting your time.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I asked this earlier and you said, you know, we need a community-wide or a nationwide effort. I mean, What have you seen in other communities, or what have you seen here to help just individual cases or individual people? Is there a magic bullet here?
No, I like what Judge Sebeki says. If there's a magic bullet, we'd use it.
Right.
There isn't one. It takes community effort. And I, you know, like I see people in our lighthouse that are totally recovered as far as not using the drug. One thing is getting them away from it and keeping them away from it long enough to let them know there's a life outside of it. I see our community corrections, our work release, the programs they've got going. I see them working. We've got people coming to our church that, you know, when they first start coming, you know, they looked horrible. Went to jail. You can look at their jail pictures and they look like they was deaf, and now they're coming through the jail and they're going into the work release. And so there's a lot of elements. It's just everybody working together. I do think one thing that would work really good is like we did when we was fighting the methamphetamine, is come together and talk about this.
Have some sort of a group.
Yeah, some kind of rally, some kind of group.
Okay.
You know, doctors, whoever would give us, you know, like when I'm saying stuff, they could say, well, that ain't quite like that, but this would work, you know, brainstorm, think things through.
Well, let's work on that. I mean, there's people that listen to this show and periodically will comment to me about it and said, I heard you talk about this. We need to do this, or we need to do that. I mean, I definitely think that this is, it's a threat, for our community. And it's something that we have to look at and face head on.
Yeah.
I want to give you kind of the last word on what you'd like to see happen to make Lighthouse as successful as possible. And again, I just really appreciate you coming on today, Pete.
Well, Grant, our success is lives being changed, and it doesn't matter if they're changed in the jail or changed in a prison. We do prison ministry also. And we go into prison and watch lives be changed. Our hope is that some way, you know, everybody can get together and just work together as a team and just see this thing done.
Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, and you stay warm, okay?
Hey, thank you.
Focus on the Community has been brought to you by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington and Ligoti. You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's program and past shows when you visit our website, wamwamfm.com. I'm Grant Schwartzentruber, inviting you to tune in every Saturday morning at 8:35 on Memories 107.9 and the General 95.9 and 1580 WAMW as we focus on the community.